You're listening to the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show, only on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
We're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, we have with us as our guest on the line for this segment, Dr. Pat LeBlanc, who is the director of the Veterinary Teaching Hospital at Michigan State University and a specialist himself in the area of anesthesiology. Welcome to the show, Dr. LeBlanc.
Thank you very much, Lee and Rick.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you back on the show. Dr. LeBlanc, as we were talking about in the last segment, we're dealing with the issue of the various specialties that are coming into the fore in the area of veterinary medicine. Can you please explain for our listeners kind of the evolution that you've seen take place over the last few years to where general veterinary medicine has gone into a much higher degree of specialty? Specialization and a lot of equipment that goes with that specialization.
Yes, Lee, we have specialists in just about the all the same areas that they have specialists in human medicine. I mean, we have people who are, as myself, board certified in veterinary anesthesia. We have people who are specialized in various forms of surgery, not only, I'm not talking about just like large versus small animal. I'm talking about orthopedic surgery, some people more oncology surgery. We have people who are board certified in diagnostic imaging, also known as radiology, internal medicine, oncology, ophthalmology, dermatology, cardiology, pretty much basically all the specialties that you have in human medicine. And it's gotten, as you say, it's gotten more and more veterinarians want to be specialized. Right now, about 30 to 40% of our graduating students actually apply for some postgraduate training for after they graduate.
And what's driving that trend in your mind?
It's kind of interesting to deal with cases on a little bit more specialized basis. It doesn't mean that we're better veterinarians. It's just that these people have much greater depth in a particular topic, and I think people just kind of maybe find it kind of interesting.
Well, and it's interesting that it's going down that path because kind of the laugh line that everyone always used to say about what made vets special is, unlike dealing with people, you have to be able to deal with a horse or a pig or a dog or a bird or all different kinds of animals, whereas all human beings typically are pretty much alike and have all the same parts. So already you had to have a larger field of knowledge. Now it's interesting that they're going down the path of really focusing and becoming great in a single particular area.
Yes, you're right. Our education is broad. You have to, at least in Michigan, you can't track. You can't say I'm just doing equine or I'm just doing small animal. You have to take the broad thing. And when that attracts a lot of people to veterinary medicine, we like to be these generalists, but yet then as people get closer to graduation, they find something that's interesting to them, and then they think, well, shoot, you know what? Now I just want to do cardiology.
And so I've got a quick question, kind of a tail wagging the dog. When we think of specialization, is the audience, the individuals out there that have the animals kind of dictating these specializations, or are the specializations developing and is it a struggle to get people to recognize them and bring their animals to that specialization? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, definitely, Rick. I think the pet owners are requesting maybe a little bit deeper level of understanding of some of these topics. So I think it's being driven by the marketplace.
And as you get more of those developed, is it a difficulty in actually broadcasting that out to the general populace that isn't aware that those specialties even occur?
Yeah, it is hard to make that, and that's radio shows like yourselves. This is a wonderful opportunity for us to talk about that. Also, is an opportunity to tell people that there is a difference between a specialist and someone whose practice is exclusive something or other. So someone thinks, well, he or she is a specialist in cat. Well, there is no specialist. Their practice might be exclusive cat, for example, but there's no specialty in that.
Okay.
And it's something that the American Veterinary Medical Association has made a pretty strong stance on, because to become a specialist is a lot of work. It's an additional at least 4 years of training after vet school and a challenging board exam to pass. and all kinds of requirements for publications and things to be qualify yourself as a specialist. But just because your practice only does, for example, surgery, and you haven't done a residency and passed a board exam, you can't call yourself a specialist.
So when you see the word out there, specialist, after someone's name, it really carries some weight.
It does.
Okay.
But so if they do say they're specialists, they should be board certified.
And probably pretty darn tired.
Yeah, pretty tired. And older, too, because it takes a little time to get through this process.
I got you.
We actually have close to 50 people here at Michigan State who are at some point in their training to become a specialist.
Wow, that's fantastic. Speaking of Michigan State, Dr. LeBlanc, can you explain to our listeners some of the services that Michigan State is fairly unique in offering in this area? Because a lot of times people think of they're having a problem with their vet because the vet just can't do certain services because they don't have the equipment or things like that. What are the things that really are unique at Michigan State that people can get done with their animals?
Well, as far as equipment, thanks, Lee, for asking that question. As far as equipment that our specialists have at their disposal, one of the big ones would be in the area of diagnostic imaging. You know, we have not only x-rays, but we have CAT scans. I mean, you don't usually see those in a private practice, but our specialists in diagnostic imaging have taken extensive training in how to take CAT scans and do CAT scans, including we also have an MRI here. In fact, one of three MRIs in the country that's large enough to put a horse in. We actually had an African lion in it 2 weeks ago, had its whole head in there to check it for, see if it had a brain tumor. So it's this huge MRI that we have. So these are things that you just wouldn't have in a private practice that our specialists really, these kind of equipment they like to have. Similarly, cardiologists. We have three board-certified cardiologists here, and they've got their own cardiac cath machine, which allows them to do like angiograms, like they do in people.
Wow, that's fascinating. Is the reason why the university gets them... I'm imagining that it has something to do, again, with the issue of volume, that there just isn't the volume for private practitioners to get into this type of work. Is that the case, that as the field grows, you might see more and more individuals actually get into it?
Yes, and also if a individual private practice wants to hire, for example, a specialist in radiology, or diagnostic imaging, they're going to have to pony up and buy some of this fancy stuff. Because if you've gone through the training to become a specialist in diagnostic imaging, you don't want to just sit there and look at radiographs all day. You're going to want to look at MRIs and CTs and ultrasounds and all these things. So those specialists are going to only go to practices that have that kind of equipment.
And that pairs up with the university. It's almost necessary to lead the industry. You're not going to be able to move things forward if there isn't an institution out there that can actually develop the training and expertise to export the individual out there, right?
Exactly correct, Rick. Yep, okay. That's right.
Interesting. And Doctor, I wanted to ask you about the Advanced Rehabilitation Center. I was reading something about the rehab facilities that you have available. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I can talk on two fronts. One is the director of the hospital, and one is a pet owner. It's a facility as a director. I'll tell you, it's a facility that we've sent two technicians to a specialized training from a technician standpoint that now they're like a physical therapist for animals. It's not the same as a physical therapist. I'll clarify that. But it was a pretty extensive several-month process that they had to go through. And we have underwater treadmill. We have laser therapy. We have ultrasound therapy. A lot of the same therapies that you personally could get, Lee, if you went to a physical therapist.
Wow.
As a pet owner, I'll tell you, my own dog went to it, and she was lame. She's getting a little bit older, you know, yellow lab, limped around a lot, and, just couldn't get the exercise she needed to lose some of that weight, which would be helpful for her joints. With our underwater treadmill, though, we could run her inside this underwater treadmill. It didn't have the stress on her joints because she's buoyant now, and she started getting more muscle mass, and her arthritis went away.
Wow, that's fascinating. And I just can't imagine there are very many people that have an underwater treadmill as part of their regular practice. Is that correct?
There is none in this area, in the Lansing area.
Okay, because I was going to say, it's an interesting thing because as this big budget debate is taking place in Washington, you hear about programs like the lobster being put on the treadmills, and they're spending $1 million to study that. And for a lot of people who wondered how, I guess they just got their answer. An underwater treadmill is probably the way that something like that happens. So it's fascinating. Dr. LeBlanc, in terms of the overall university, how do you go about drawing in the right people to be in the right area of specialization? Because the problem you can sometimes run into is a lot of people go into one category and nobody goes into others, and then you get a glut in some areas and a drought in others. How does the university deal with that?
Well, that's a very good point, Lee, and that does happen with time. So some of the areas that are sort of underserved, in other words, there's not many people going into these areas. One is my area of anesthesiology, and yet we need people to do those, to be in that specialty here, because we have an obligation not only to take care of these higher-level cases, but to train our veterinary students in the field of anesthesia. So that's one. Another one is neurology. There's just not that many veterinarians going into neurology, but yet there is a lot of universities need to have neurologists because our students need to know different neuro things. So it's something we look at all the time, but it's a very real problem, is getting the proper specialists here to not only handle the caseload, but also to train the future veterinarians.
Interesting. And, Doctor, in terms of where MSU is going, is there anything on the horizon that you see the vet school doing in terms of increasing its ability to focus in on some of these other fairly unique areas, or really continue its eminence in terms of being a top veterinary school in the world?
Well, thank you. I like to think we're the top in the universe. I think I've told you that before, Lee, but you didn't remember that. But we are the top in the universe, I like to say. But but we just added a new specialty service here in the hospital, and it's one of the number one reasons. This problem in animals is one of the number one reasons why pets are euthanized, and that is behavior. And there is a specialty in the field of animal behavior. This is not the same as a dog trainer or anything like that. It's a veterinarian who is has a lot of training in animal behavior. And we have someone here now who's in training to be a behavior specialist. And, you know, she deals with such issues as, you know, inappropriate elimination, aggression, separation anxiety, all these things. It's a service that we just started about a month ago.
Will that arc over various species of animals? Will it be mainly focused towards dogs?
So far, most of her caseload has been dogs, but she has done a few cats. She does house calls, too, so because sometimes you need to see how the animal's doing in the environment. And I believe coming up soon, she even has a Vietnamese potbelly pig who she's going to do some behavioral work with on as well.
I'd like to hear how that comes out.
Yeah, it's an interesting problem.
Absolutely. We've been speaking this morning with Dr. Pat LeBlanc, the director of the Veterinary Teaching Hospital at Michigan State University. As usual, Dr. LeBlanc, we just don't have as much time as we would like, but I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing the information about it. It's been very enlightening.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate giving the opportunity to tell people in Michigan about our facility.
Oh, it was our pleasure. And, Rick, after the break, we're going to continue the conversation. We're going to talk with Dr. Ben Colmery, who is a dental specialist out of the Ann Arbor area, right here on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com.
If you're out of the listening area, you can hear our show live online. Go to 1320WILS.com and click on the Listen Live link. Got some ideas, suggestions, questions? Email us at mmpets@1320wils.com. Join our Facebook page at Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. You can upload your own pictures, make comments, and interact with other pet enthusiasts.
Sorry, I'm not home.